Hello, Florida Bar members and Florida registered paralegals. This is a quick reminder from the Standing Committee on Mental Health and Wellness of Florida Lawyers that you are approved to use the Florida Lawyers Helpline, a completely free and confidential around-the-clock helpline designed to support you in managing the challenges of both your personal and professional life. By dialing 833-FL1-WELL or 833-351-9355, you can connect with mental health professionals who are ready to assist you. Take advantage of up to 5 complimentary in-person or telehealth counseling sessions annually, and remember, there's no limit to the number of calls you can make. Reach out today.
You're listening to the Florida Bar Podcast, brought to you by the Florida Bar's Practice Resource Center, Legal Fuel. Produced by the broadcast professionals of the Florida Bar.
Welcome to the Florida Bar's Legal Fuel Podcast, brought to you by the Practice Resource Center of the Florida Bar. We're so glad you're joining us. This is Christine Bilbrey. I'm the director of the Practice Resource Center and one of the hosts of the show, which is being recorded from our studio in Tallahassee, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Moore. I'm a practice management advisor at the Florida Bar and co-host of today's podcast. Our goal at the Practice Resource Center is to assist Florida attorneys with running the business side of their law practices. We focus on a different topic each month and carry the theme through our website with related tips, videos, and articles.
So the use of generative artificial intelligence by lawyers has shown enormous potential for efficiency, quality, and improved client service, but it also requires the careful consideration of ethics, data security, and an understanding of the degree of human supervision required. Agentic AI is now emerging and could further transform the business of law. So joining us today to discuss agentic AI is Tom Martin, the founder and CEO of LawDroid.
Tom Martin is a generative AI expert who serves as CEO of LawDroid, principal of Deep Legal, an adjunct professor at Suffolk Law School, where he literally wrote the textbook on AI and legal services. As an ABA Legal Rebel and Fast Case 50 honoree appointed to the ABA Center for Innovation, he's transforming the legal industry through his companies, teaching, and speaking at major conferences like the ABA Tech Show and Legal Week. A Yale and UCLA law graduate, Tom hosts the LawDroid Manifesto podcast and conference while making a dent in the universe from his home in Vancouver, Canada. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hey there. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to share what I know about agentic AI.
We're excited too. I feel like in tech world, it was a million years ago when you were on with us. So let's start with a definition of agentic AI in simple terms and how it differs fundamentally from previous generative AI models that our listeners might already be familiar with.
Yeah, happy to do so. And thank you so much for having me back on the show. Things definitely have changed. So a simple definition of agentic AI is that it introduces a degree of autonomy. And the way it does that is by actually giving discretion to the AI to choose different tools to use. And we can get more specific in particular, but I think the big insight, and I think why people are so excited about agentic AI, is that the focus becomes on outcomes, right? So far, our experience with ChatGPT or co-pilots is that they provide helpful assistance, but they don't actually have a focus on outcomes. And so through the use of tools, knowledge base, the ability to make judgment calls, agentic AI can actually deliver outcomes.
That's very interesting. So it sounds like agentic reasoning does more than just respond, but also deliberates. Can you discuss the mixture of experts or MOE architecture and how agentic AI has a level of autonomy that goes beyond ChatGPT?
Yeah, so it's better to put it in concrete terms. An example of an agent that I use daily is one on OpenAI, where it simply goes out in the world and it gathers together like the latest AI research papers for me. You could set up these on OpenAI's platform where you give it the keywords of the types of papers that you're looking for, And then it goes onto the web and it finds them and delivers them to you through email every day at a certain time. So what it does there is you give it a request, it creates a plan, it reasons through where it's going to find the information that's responsive to your request, and then it actually takes action on that plan and goes out in the world, searches, gets the articles, and then delivers them to you by email. So that, in a very short example, is one way that an agent can do some work for you.
Okay. And so we read your article, Thinking Like a Lawyer, Agentic AI and the New Legal Playbook. So you highlighted agentic AI's ability to reason, plan, and execute. But is this also, are we venturing closer to the scary part, the part of AI that people are worried about? Like, what can it do on its own right now that's different, like real specific things? So if it's bringing this stuff back to you, can it also, is it creating things? Is it emailing other people? What's happening?
Yeah, it is a little scary when we delegate control to something else. You know, it could be we just hire a new assistant and we delegate a certain amount of control to communicate with our clients to that assistant. And that gives some anxiety. Certainly when it's something other than a human being, it gets us a little more concerned than usual. You know, the thing is that there is room for concern. I get it. Especially right now, agentic AI is so new that there's a lot of issues to work through, smooth over, refine. I don't know that agentic AI is ready right now for use in law firms at scale. It's kind of like generative AI for us 3 years ago. You know, we're kind of in the mode of discovery and learning different ways of applying it. But there are certain things that you can delegate to it, like the example that I gave of just finding research papers or finding the news and then aggregating it for you. So one good example of using agentic AI is actually a piece of software that I created recently called SiteCheck AI. And what that does is you upload a document, a pleading, a motion, and then you have it review it to determine if any of the citations are invalid. That's a very controlled example where it can deliver a certain outcome, which is telling you what citations are valid or invalid, and is pretty reliable in doing that.
So it's eliminating the percentage of risk that for the hallucinations. Because, you know, I'm sure everyone listening has seen how many attorneys have gotten in trouble already for submitting, pleadings with the court, and it turns out they're all or some just made up cases because the generative AI wants to please you. So what level of certainty is SiteCheck delivering?
Oh, well, SiteCheck is delivering extreme reliability. In fact, I actually uploaded the original Mata versus Avianca pleading that got the Schwartz and LaDuca in trouble, right? And they got cited for that. Uh-huh. And actually, it found every single citation that was a problem, and it would have prevented them from getting sanctioned by the court. And there's been lots of other examples. I think we've already had over 3,000 citations checked through the system. It even finds when the case names don't match exactly, to alert you, you know, to the fact that you may have made a mistake in how you cited a particular case.
And so is SiteCheck, is that in beta, or is that something that's out there available? What's the status of that?
It's actually out there in the world right now, SiteCheck.ai. Yeah, up to 5 reports for free. So it's pretty cool.
That is cool.
But it is an example of the different types of automation you can use. And just to step back for a second and give you a compare and contrast between different systems, you know, you have the old school if-then workflow, where if a certain condition is met, then you do something. We all know that. You know, you actually program that and it's predictable every single time, 100%. Then the second example is where you include AI in some of those steps. And so one of the steps might be that you're actually using an AI model to summarize a piece of text. But you still have control ultimately over the steps and the workflow. The third example is where you have an agentic workflow, which is becoming more popular now. And that's where you actually have the AI itself planning what the steps are going to be rather than you providing predefined steps to it. And so that's kind of exciting, but at the same time, it does introduce some level of uncertainty because the AI each time can plan out what those steps are, and it may lead to different steps, different reasoning at each step. And so it multiplies the ability for it to be less predictable. And so that should cause some pause for lawyers about whether or not that's an application of it that they want to introduce to their firm. They really need to think thoroughly about how they're using it. Like I said, for some things that are simple, it doesn't present much risk. But if it's something like researching or giving advice, they probably want to think twice about that.
Are there products out there already that, attorneys can access that incorporate agentic AI? What's the status of that?
Yeah, there are. There's some different platforms where you can, ask a question. Like, for example, I think Harvey was just demonstrating their incorporation of deep research from OpenAI, which basically, they just plugged into deep research on OpenAI. There wasn't much addition to it in terms of what it could do, and you can get the same thing from just going to OpenAI's platform. But that is an example of an agent that takes your request of what you're wanting to research. It plans out what to look for and where. It even brings you into the loop to refine it. Like maybe you want to include only certain jurisdictions. Maybe you want to refine the topic, and then it goes out. It researches it, gets all the different citations, and then presents you with a nice report that's as detailed as you want it to be in whatever format you want. If you want to include tables and stuff like that, it can. But here's the thing. I want to point out one thing that I think should be in attorneys' minds, and I don't think it's being talked about really. It has to do with something that I'm just calling visibility. If we take the simple example of I give an agent an assignment to daily at 7 a.m. report to me the top news, right? The top 10 news stories.
Uh-huh.
If I get those news stories and I take that as the universe of important stuff that's happening, I can, and if I make judgment calls on that, like maybe I make stock investments or I advise people just based upon that information, I could be misguided because I don't have visibility into the universe of stories for myself with my own brain to determine what's important, what's not. I've kind of delegated that to the AI agent to provide me with that. And so I caution lawyers and people in general that when you use agents like this, if you want to be comprehensive in providing reliable guidance, you also need to take a look with your own fresh eyes. Because if you looked at the news yourself and you look through all the different stories that are out there, you might find a few things that are critically important. And so I wouldn't delegate it entirely to the AI agent. It's very useful. It's very helpful. It saves a lot of time from having to find it yourself. But I would use it in addition to my own curation and my own research.
So the agentic AI can have a bias in it, just like an algorithm or I guess the extreme version would be people that have become radicalized through Facebook because of what was fed into their feed that they were seeing daily. It sounds like it could go that way where it's influencing you in a way you weren't aware of. So that is frightening.
Yeah, I mean, there could be some bias like that. When I talk about visibility, I'm not talking so much about bias in that sense. I'm talking about not being able to see other information that might be extremely important to me making a decision or me providing guidance to someone else.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I would imagine, especially for solos, agentic AI could be a game changer. You know, if you have all of these, you know, agents, and I'm doing my air quotes here, but what do you foresee, maybe just in the future, some tasks or series of tasks that agentic AI could successfully perform, say for a solo, you know, to help them in their practice? What would you say what might be some of those things?
I'm really happy to address that and bring it down to earth, because one very concrete way that it could help, and this is something we actually make available on our platform, is an AI receptionist. You know, nothing fancy. It just, it's given the task of answering phone calls, welcoming people, asking them if they're a new client, existing client, or something else. When the person answers, it could actually understand what they're saying. Even if they say something like, well, you should know who I am. I've been working with you guys for 5 years, right? And they don't actually answer the question, but they say it that way. It goes through the AI and it understands that that's a existing client and then takes them down the route that's appropriate for an existing client, says, do you want to talk to the attorney, to the paralegal, so on. And so that is an agent, because it's actually functioning there in the world, taking in the input from people that are calling in, and it could transfer calls, take messages, do all of that good stuff that truly provides value in a real concrete way. And I think an important difference between doing it the old-fashioned, you know, human-centered way versus, or excuse me, human-driven way, where you have a person answering the phone versus an AI, is just the amount of data that you have. These people are interacting with you on a daily basis, hourly, minute by minute, and they're saying all of these things that are critical for you to know. Now, when it's a person, they may or may not remember what the conversation was about. But if it's an AI, you have records and archives, and you could really, glean a lot of useful insights from that information.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions about that. One, does it sound like a human? Do the callers know they're talking to an AI agent?
You know, that's the number one question I get about that every single time. So the AI that we have, you could tell that it's an AI. Are there voices that we are looking at to incorporate that sound very human? Yes. The most important thing is transparency. We always disclose that they're talking to an AI agent. We say, hi, you know, okay, I'm so-and-so, an automated assistant, to let everyone know. In California, it happens to be the law that you have to make that disclosure, but I think it's just a best practice.
Okay. And then the other thing, being inside the law firm, and then also at the Florida Bar, we have a lot of programs in our department. One of them is Lawyer Referral Service. And I know a lot of members of the public, when they call and they get the Lawyer Referral Service clerks, they want to tell their whole story. Yeah. So what is the agentic agent doing to, do they just let the person talk? Do they interrupt and ask for specifics? I'm wondering about the interaction, because typically when someone needs a lawyer, it's not the best moment of their lives, so they can be emotional.
And I want to add something too, just on a personal note. Really, we've been speaking to automated systems for how long? You call the airlines. I just had that recent experience where you're at a certain point, you're like, representative, you know? So
that's
just
what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
The frustration. That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy to talk about that. And just to point out for people that may not know, like I'm actually a practicing lawyer myself for over 25 years. So like I've been there. I understand people's motivations to want to share their story, because that's what they know. You know, they don't know the legal concepts or all of the stuff that we bring to the table. They just know what their problems are. And I think one of the advantages to generative AI, you don't even have to go to the level of using agentic AI. But if you run a story that somebody says, so you just give them the freedom to download their story and run it through an AI step where it actually can categorize what the person's saying and organizing it for us, that's something we actually have in production right now. And so what that does is it allows for a much more human interaction rather than the if-then steps of like, okay, press this button to talk to us about personal injury, press that button to talk to us about divorce. You know, this way they could just tell their story and then the AI is doing the heavy lifting of categorizing it according to the way that we've trained it to do.
So it's recording them and creating some sort of transcript, but also sorting through the facts. Is that what you're...
Yeah, but it's actually doing this in real time. So the person like can explain what's going on with them and the AI is actively listening to them and then using directions that and instructions that we've provided to it. And when I say we, I mean, I get those instructions from the lawyer, you know, like, because each lawyer has a different way that they want to handle, you know, a client and how they would categorize things. So the lawyers in the driver's seat for the expertise provides me the instructions of how to interpret what the person's saying. And so then instead of just this crazy long story, you get it categorized into different subtopics, legal subtopics, and then you could take appropriate next steps based on what the person needs.
Okay. And so I don't know where the line is right now. Like what's available now, what's a year out, and what's science fiction? So if someone's called and they tell their story and the AI agent has listened to it and sorted it, will there come a time where it could, say you're a family law attorney, could it then email the person the financial disclosure forms they need? Could it look at, so it's already making an appointment, but do you know what I mean? Like, can it take more actions? How many things could it do automatically? Like, or do you see it doing? I'm just curious.
Well, I don't mean to scare people, but all of that's possible right now.
Okay.
Yeah, like if somebody called in and said, hey, you know, I'm thinking of getting divorced. I just don't know what to do. Where do I start? You know, please give me a call back. Like if an AI was listening to that, it could actually provide an entire, you know, document list or send over links to intake forms and just, you know, take the next step of gathering that information. Or even there on the phone call itself, say, oh, I understand you'd like to get divorced. Well, let's take the next step of me gathering your background information, and I'll send you a link where you can upload your financial form information, you know.
So it's connected to your portal for all of your, all the documents and payments, all of that kind of thing that attorneys are already comfortable using. But then it's not a human handling the flow of information back and forth.
Yeah. And so that's something I want to emphasize to lawyers is that, you know, the autonomy part is a double-edged sword. And for us, we need to figure out points at which we have to have a human in the loop. So if it has to do with finding a potential conflict for a, you know, potential client we might take on, we would likely want to have a human in the loop just to confirm that, verify what that conflict is that's been raised by the AI. Likewise, if there's a judgment call that's critically important, we want to have a human in the loop, not just delegate that entirely to an AI to make that decision.
Okay, so I want to pivot a little bit. So we're talking about that's the front end client intake. Let's talk about how agentic AI excels at things like strategic planning. When a lawyer has to decide how best to proceed with like a litigation case. So there's a ton of data to consider. Can you talk about how it's going to help the attorney with how to proceed in the case, the strategic part of it?
Well, the strategic part of it is where you give it the information that you want it to make it, you know, that you want it to analyze. You give it instructions about the step-by-step of what's important to you to consider. And when you provide that to the AI, if it's more agentic in nature, then it actually does its own planning of how to approach the problem. And then it plans out, you know, step one, we do this, step two, we do that. And then it has tools at its disposal to take action on each of those steps. So it could be that you ask it to make a strategic plan, and then it goes about planning how to make a strategic plan. And then gathers information from different sources. Maybe there's sources of expertise on how to conduct strategic planning, what steps to include, best practices, looks at prior examples, and then creates a strategic plan for you. But the important just one thing is that not to delegate it entirely to the AI. You have to keep yourself in the loop. We have to maintain our duties of competence and professionalism. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But if you have an attorney that's not super experienced with this type of cases, but the agentic AI could go out and look at could it look at the judge's decisions and prior settlements or judgments in this particular town, or so that it's actually giving the attorney recommendations whether they should settle or proceed or counteroffer? Like, will it give you a report of here are some likely outcomes to look at?
Well, right now we're kind of talking in the abstract, not about a particular product that's available right now, but is it possible for a generative AI product to do that? I mean, definitely. It could probably use a system like Pacer to grab prior decisions that a court has made and then conduct some type of prediction assessment based upon the current facts of the current case that you have with a client, and then comparing and contrasting it to prior decisions that the court has made. In fact, there's already some products like that are available now. Uh-huh. And one thing I want to also point out is that people are very excited about agentic AI, but much of this is possible and has been accomplished through just the use of generative AI and even just plain old fashioned AI.
I want to just kind of touch on, I guess, things that anyone should be aware of when they're using agentic AI. And I think now, since, you know, say ChatGPT or any of those other LLMs, I guess, have come out, we've all been told, hey, you know, make sure you're double checking it. If you're an attorney, treat it like it's a, you know, first year associate. You're double checking their work because, you know, it can hallucinate and come up with things that aren't accurate. Is that, I mean, and maybe this is a silly question, but would you say that's the same approach you should take with agentic AI? Because we're talking about all the things that it can do to help you, but you don't, like you said, you may want to have that human interaction. Like, how much oversight should someone have if they're using this as, say, their agent to help them do their work?
100%. In fact, it multiplies the oversight in a sense, because it's making more, it's actually making decisions on its own. When you're using ChatGPT, you're sitting there one-on-one asking it for something. It gives you a response and you could check it if you want. When it's an agent, it's taking steps on its own and you could check the output, but sometimes you're just checking the final output, right? You're not always checking the intermediate steps and the intermediate reasoning. Now, most systems, they do have transparency into those intermediate steps. They call it tracing. And that's where you've seen examples of it, like in the recent Harvey demonstration, where it says, I'm doing this now. You know, like I'm searching for articles about such and such. And it will describe what it's doing. Hopefully, there's also links to citations so you could check what it is, in fact, doing at those intermediate steps. But the amount of oversight can be as deep as you want it to be. But I highly caution lawyers that they need to keep themselves in the loop. And it's critically important to do that, even more so with agentic AI.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I've watched a ton of demos by now, because we have the standing committee for AI tools and resources here at the bar. And so there's the ones that we've watched that I'm not going to name the names of these other ones, but like it just gives you an answer and says here. And then we've watched, I was impressed because Vincent AI from VLEX, there were like literally two columns. So on one, it's giving you the responses that you look for. But on the right, it's telling you, like, I think it's what you're describing. It's showing you what it's looked at, where it came from, and, you know, why it gave you this. So you can kind of see that there is that full transparency happening.
Yeah. So it also raises this distinction that I want to point out between autonomy and reliability.
Okay.
So people are very excited about agentic AI because, as I mentioned before, it has the promise of delivering outcomes versus just, you know, some assistance. And we shouldn't mistake the autonomy that it could provide, because AI agents can deliver outcomes autonomously if we let them. But that doesn't mean that they're reliable. Those are two different things. And so the fact that an agent can work autonomously in achieving a goal does not mean that it's entirely reliable. We also have to keep track of that, and we have to ensure that that doesn't go off the rails by keeping humans in the loop to gauge the reliability of the agent at every step of its course.
I just, you know, people can be lazy or become kind of...
just complacent. Yeah. And that's what I think that's where I was going. Yeah. Is, yes, well, this can help you, but...
It worked the last three times, so it's good.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what I meant about visibility.
Okay.
Is that when it delivers these outcomes to you, it delivers a report, it's very easy to think, oh, well, I'll just turn this in. Right? This is good enough. And for most, you know, most work, for most jobs, that is good enough. But when it's the legal profession, the whole reason that we are professionals is because we're expected to deliver something that is extremely reliable and accurate and, you know, good advice, right? And that's why we have to carry malpractice insurance, is to guarantee that. And so when we do that, we have to make sure that that it's reliable. And so you can't entirely rely on what the AI provides to you. That visibility is that you have to have visibility beyond what it just provides to you. You also have to look for yourself to see, okay, what is the entire universe of research that I would have done if I hadn't delegated it to AI? And does this report that I got from AI capture all of that or not?
So I think it goes back to what we've been told, or what we say is treated as a first draft. You should continue to do your due diligence and check on the facts.
I know, but I think that there's this thing where, like the movie Her, that you start to think they're real. So like you have this very trusted employee. Yes. So, and they always do such a great job for you. So you just are like, they've got it. Mm-hmm. I can see that could very well be a thing. So I'm glad that you're reminding us that in the legal profession, please don't slip into that. I'm going to pivot a little bit because I want to talk about how this is going to have a business impact. So I think there are going to be, we've heard this from different people, that maybe there's people that thought they're at a big firm, but with generative or agentic AI, they're thinking about going out on their own, because now as a solo, because you have all these agents working for you, you don't need a huge staff. So there's maybe the ability to compete with these big firms in a way that a solo never could before. And then the flip side of that is that there are a lot of attorneys terrified that this is going to reduce their billable hours. And so they don't want that anywhere near their firm. So can you talk about the financial impacts of what's going to happen?
Yeah. You know, when I started off, hung out my own shingle, I was a solo. I really wish at the time, and this was back in 2006, I wish I had these tools available. One example that I mentioned, AI receptionist. Okay. That would have saved me, you know, $1,000 or more per month just to have that. One of my first jobs was working, for a personal injury firm. And my boss, you know, there was tons of discovery that he received, and then he delegated to, I think it was four or five paralegals, to put together all the information to answer the discovery responses. There's now an AI product that can really help do, you know, 80% of that. Gleaning the facts from the client file. Preparing, you know, standardized objections and then specific objections, and creating, a response that's 80% there, saves a ton of time. He probably would only need, you know, a couple of paralegals with that technology. So it definitely does even the playing field, so that smaller players can accomplish a lot more with these tools than they would otherwise be able to do. So does that mean eliminating jobs? Not necessarily. It could mean that you could take on more cases, be more profitable. It depends on the owner, you know, the person that's running the firm, or the partners, and where they want to take it.
And I think one of the positive things, and I want you to weigh in on this, does it have the potential to improve the delivery of legal services to clients? Because now lawyers are going to have the freedom to practice at a higher level. Do you think that is going to be a natural outcome?
I absolutely believe that's the case, because a lot of the stuff that we take up time with is not the truly valuable, insightful stuff. You know, a lot of it is just kind of the bric-a-brac daily grind of a lot of administrative work, a lot of, you know, putting reading thousands of pages of material to gather pieces of information. So it really condenses the amount of time, compresses the amount of time that we spend on that busy work, and gives us time to actually think through how we're going to frame an argument, to pursue other lines of investigation, to pursue other arguments that we wouldn't have even had the wherewithal to think of. And I think that's what we should be doing, truly, right? As lawyers, that's the part that we should be doing. And so this technology allows us to do more of that. The part you mentioned earlier about it being a threat to the billable hour, you know, lawyers, there's no reason to have an allegiance to a particular business model, right? If you know, the billable hour is no longer viable, that doesn't mean that we're out of business. It just means that we come up with a different business model. You know, if we're able to deliver outcomes based upon the technology we have available now, well, we charge for that outcome. We charge for the value that we provide. It's just a different way of charging. You know, it doesn't threaten us as professionals. It just means that we have to think differently about how we value and bill for our services.
That, and as you're talking, it made me think about notoriously overworked public defenders with way too many cases. Are there products that are available in the government sector, do you think, sort of, it's like an access to justice issue that could be used by state attorneys or public defenders to you know, go ahead and go through all those files so they're not like seeing the file when they're standing in front of the judge for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, there are products that are legal AI products that could help with that, that they could feed in, you know, client information, and it could summarize the case so that when they step in front of a judge, they actually can read and review a summary before they get up there. Whereas if they were doing it the old-fashioned way and they're completely overworked by having to read through it themselves and try to understand what's going on, this way they can get, you know, the cliff notes from an AI so that they could actually probably have time to think through how to approach a case. So yeah, there's definitely more efficiency that it could bring to the A to J world. But it's also possible to do that with off-the-shelf AI products. I think of Notebook LM, for example, where you can just upload a bunch of documents, ask questions, get summaries. It works pretty well.
I mean, and honestly, that becomes a quality of life issue when you're talking about mental health in those positions where there's such high burnout. So, you know, I hope more of that is happening.
And well, I'll just throw in there that there is another way to use that time you get back. One could be for more work, more thinking, more argument. But yes, another way to use it would be, hey, take a walk on the beach, smell the roses, enjoy yourself a little bit.
Yeah, have a life.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about all of the wonderful things it can do to help attorneys, but we have to touch on the ethical obligations when using agentic AI, specifically in relation to what the last question was talking about is, I think, client confidentiality. We have to think about that. So what are your thoughts on all of that and what lawyers should be thinking about?
Well, it's something that I think about a lot, both as a practicing lawyer and a law professor now, is we need to be careful. You know, we have a duty of confidentiality, competence, diligence, and all of that. And so we need to use products that also take that as seriously as we do. And the ways that could be done is that we ensure that the AI models that we use to conduct this reasoning, to plan things out and do all of that amazing stuff, that they agree not to train against our data, because that risk is that if they train against the data, it becomes part of their database essentially, and then potentially could be disclosed to third parties. However unlikely that is, it could still potentially happen. So they have to agree not to train against the data. Now, most legal AI vendors that I know of, that's the default, right? Because if they transgressed on that, then they'd be out of business. So they typically don't train against the data. We don't. The other part is data retention. How long do they hold on to the data? And I think a good choice would be to pick a company where they put all of that control in your hands, right? You could choose yourself if you want to get rid of it and on what basis and how frequently. And then the third pillar of that is security and encryption, that when the data gets transmitted, that it's done in a protected way through encryption, that when it sits in their database, that it's encrypted. So if somebody breaks in, it would be unintelligible. And so those three different steps provide some reliability that it's going to remain confidential, that it's going to remain secure.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. So one of the hot button issues when all of this was going on, when they started the AI committee here at the Florida Bar, was the question of, should there be new rules? Some judges have sent out orders like, if you've used AI, you've got to, you know, attach this notice and disclose it. And so what is your opinion? Do you think there need to be regulatory or ethical guidelines that are updated because of the use of agentic AI in the legal field?
I don't think so. I have a chapter dedicated to this for my students in my class.
Okay.
Where I actually surveyed a number of these different court orders and some of the ethics opinions that came out. And what I think is that the rules that we currently have been flexible enough for every other technology, and they are for AI. Now, you may want to have some guidance in there that interprets that this particular rule, when applied to you, generative AI or agentic AI, should be looked at this way or that way. That might be helpful for a practitioner to understand how it applies in this context, but to actually change the rules themselves about confidentiality, no. I mean, what we have describes the duties that we have to take seriously. One example is Rule 11. You know, Rule 11, when you file pleadings with federal court, essentially say that you're taking responsibility for the accuracy and reliability of those documents and what they say. And that's good enough. You know, like if you file something that has fake citations in it, well, Rule 11 makes you responsible for it, as it should. So that rule needs no change. It's pretty effective.
Great.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about cost here, because I'm sure a lot of the folks that are listening are probably thinking, how much is this going to, you know,
and it was really expensive.
Yes, it was. How can I add this into my budget? So, and perhaps the cost of, you know, AI can be a big deterrent for a small firm or a solo. And, you know, especially with the release of the DeepSeek R1, I know that was cheaper and that came out in January. How has that affected, you know, the pricing of all of the AI products? What are your thoughts on that?
Is it going to come down more?
Yes.
Yeah, it'd be great if it did, but there's a bit of consolidation happening in the market right now, where I don't know if that will lead to less expensive products. But I certainly understand the concern. I'm really glad that you asked about cost, because agentic is more expensive. Think of it this way. Like, if we just look at how many calls, like how many times are we reaching out to use the AI? If we're sitting down using a Copilot, ChatGPT, we ask it for something and then it gives us a response. Well, the way we get charged for that is either we're paying monthly for it, or if you're paying for the actual amount of information you're sending, it'll charge you for the amount of information it sends back. And so that's fairly limited, because it's like one interaction back and forth. But if it's agentic, remember all those planning steps I was talking about? All those times where it's describing all the steps that it's doing and what it's doing and where it's grabbing information from. Like, each and every one of those steps is a separate call to the AI model. So it's not just you asking for something and you getting something back. It is multiplying that 100-fold. And so agentic sounds fantastic. There are limitations that I mentioned about it. But another limitation to think about is just the immense added costs that it brings to the table. So finding, you know, a product that can deliver that in a cost-effective way is going to be more challenging. That's why you've seen it roll out with some larger firms like CoCounsel or Harvey, because they charge a lot more for that.
Okay, that makes sense. So for firms that are perhaps interested in this, they want to get started, they're in the beginning stages of exploring agentic AI, what are your recommendations as far as, you know, what should we do? You know, what kind of training do we need for our legal professionals? Just kind of like, just basics, you know, not to scare people, but what should they consider if they're wanting to get started with this?
So to get started with it, there's actually like a couple of courses that are available both through Anthropic and OpenAI. You know, why not go to the source and, you know, they have free information that's available about agentic AI where they show how to use it through their own system. And I would also take the next step, which is just experimenting with it in a low risk, easy way. Like the one that I gave as an example, through ChatGPT, you can give it the task of going out, finding information from the local news. Maybe if you're a personal injury lawyer, it might be about like what the rates are, insurance rates, or how many people have been in certain accidents in certain intersections or what have you. And it could gather that information for you on a daily basis, summarize it, and deliver it to your doorstep in your email at a certain time. That would be one way of experimenting with it. Another, some people might be familiar with a tool called Zapier, where you could put together different automations. Well, Zapier has some, it has agents that you could set up, and naturally, because Zapier already has integrations with many different types of pieces of software, you can kind of connect things together and do some interesting things, especially for solos and small firms. I would suggest that.
Oh, that's great. I haven't heard Zapier mentioned in a while, but that was, I didn't know that was also bringing this into it. Excellent. Okay, Tom. So I do want you to look in your magic ball. 5 or 10 years down the road, what realistically, describe the law firm of the future, but just 5 or 10 years down the road, what is it going to look like as a client walking in or an attorney joining a firm? What's going to be different?
What's going to be different is that a lot of the busy work is going to be automated. We're going to get to focus more on the critical hard stuff, which could be a double-edged sword, right? Because we get to think more, we get to work on harder stuff, but it's harder stuff or it's more thoughtful. And depending on how you approach it, it could be more rewarding by taking some time for yourself on that well-deserved efficiency gain, or just working more. So I just really caution people to center yourself, you know, center your well-being and your health, even with all of this going on. That's critically important. But I do see a lot more automation in the law firm, a lot more use of generative AI to eliminate a lot of the busy work. And even for legal research, it's becoming much more reliable. So I do see the firm changing, being much more scalable to handle work with many more clients. But ultimately, I hope it leads to lawyers that are happier and healthier and more fulfilled.
I love that. That's a perfect cliche. Yes. Yes. Don't be afraid of the robots. It could lead to greater mental health. That's beautiful. Well, it looks like we've reached the end of our program. Thank you so much, Tom Martin, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Tom, if our listeners have questions, where can they find some of your resources?
Yeah, thank you. So my newsletter is called LawDroidManifesto.com. And weekly, I have multiple articles that come out about AI in the law and how to think through it, how to work through it, and podcast myself with innovators in the law that are working through these interesting times and sharing the wealth of their knowledge. So it's definitely interesting times, and I could help you through it. Go to LawDroidManifesto.com. It'd be a pleasure to have you there.
Thank you. We will post that. If you like what you heard today, please rate us an Apple Podcast. Join us next time for another episode of the Florida Bar's Legal Fuel Podcast, brought to you by the Practice Resource Center of the Florida Bar. I'm Christine Bilbrey.
And I'm Jamie Moore. Until next time, thank you for listening.
If you'd like more information about today's show, please visit legalfuel.com. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to the Florida Bar's podcast via iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and RSS. Find the Florida Bar's Practice Resource Center, Legal Fuel, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, the Florida Bar. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer.
Are you looking to grow your practice? Consider joining the Florida Bar's Lawyer Referral Service. There's never been a better time to apply because we are currently waiving the $125 annual fee, so members who qualify can join the Florida Bar LRS for free. All panel members of the Florida Bar Lawyer Referral Service must be licensed in Florida, must be members in good standing, and must carry a minimum of $100,000 in professional liability insurance to participate. Panel members must also maintain an office physically located in one of the 52 Florida counties served by the Florida Bar Lawyer Referral Service. For more information and to apply, please go to floridabar.org/LRS.